Hi, and welcome actually to the Book of Vayikra. Welcome to the shiur that we're doing. On the Book of Vayikra, book translated into English usually is Leviticus. Probably not a good translation because it's mostly not about the tribe of Levi. It's about the Kohanim who within the tribe of Levi served as the priests. Okay, that's a small technical point. Normally we're doing each Sedra, so we're doing each weekly Torah reading, some kind of overview and trying to feel the structure and dynamics of what's the thematic sort of, there's lots of elements to it, but how to tie together and what is it as a unit trying to give us. This week we're going to cover two. There's 2 weeks worth of readings because we didn't get to do last week as a Purim. So we've got to cover both Vayikra and Tzav. Now, Vayikra as a whole often is the book of Torah that people most struggle with for a number of reasons. When we were kids, we used to run a youth movement and you always had to ask kids about the Sedra, about the weekly Torah portion. And while there was the stories and the narratives going on in, all the way through Bereishis, through Genesis, you had Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Jacob and all the dynamics and Yosef being sold into slavery and then the whole Exodus, Shemois, this Egypt and coming out of slavery and receiving Torah, this full of golden calf, full of narrative elements that are naturally fascinating, gripping. Later on in Bamidbar, we're going to have a lot of narrative, all sorts of stories as the Jewish people struggle with the spies, with the rebellion of Korach, with Bilam trying to curse them, and so on. Vayikra has virtually no narrative. Almost all of it takes place in one day. And its subject matter seems not only legalistic, but unrelatable, because its subject matter is sacrifices. Animal sacrifices in a temple, and we haven't done that for thousands of years. And today it seems out of sync with our values of society. Not only that, it seemed difficult to connect to and relate to for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. You see different Rishonim, early commentators in medieval times, trying to explain some of the dynamics behind it and so on. So at first it seems very technical, very unrelatable. Its central laws, apart from sacrifices, include things like tzoras. There's literally two Torah readings on some kind of skin infection or discoloration or something that is central, and that we'll get there in a few weeks' time. Mitzvah Hashem, please God, we'll get there. So there's things that just seem very hard to relate to. And usually while you're reading the book of Vayikra, there's Pesach going on, sometimes Purim going on. So you got a lot of festivals, Shavuos. So you got a lot of things to talk about apart from Vayikra, so we don't get to learn it as much. And yet, the rabbis themselves, Chazal themselves in the Medrash Yashir, describe the whole of Torah as like a journey of five steps. Two steps going up, the central step, and two steps coming down. The book of Bereishis is a step up. The book of Shemos of Exodus is a step up. The book of Vayikra, Leviticus, or Kohanicus, whatever it should have been called. The book of Vayikra, the central book. Then you come down, the book of Bamidbar, Numbers, the book of Devarim, Deuteronomy. So Vayikra is central. And in narrative, it makes sense. Because how did the book of Shemos finish? The last words were, in essence, that the Jewish people have come out of Egypt. There was the hiccup of the golden calf. They received the Torah, the Ten Commandments, at least the hiccup of the golden calf. They then build this home for God's presence. And the last verses are, the last psukim are, there's a cloud of God's glory on the Mishkan, on the dwelling place of God's presence. Nobody can enter. And if they travel, the cloud would have to lift and then it would come down again. So we have this intense sense of there's a place of God's presence. And the opening word of Vayikra is Vayikra, he called, right? As Rashi says, the Lashon Chippah, an expression of love. God called, Vayikra Moshe, Hashem calls to Moshe, Vayidabe love me'ohal mo'ed lema. And he spoke to him inside the tent of meeting. He invited him into that cloud, into that presence that no one could enter. Vayikra is now the world inside. Everything up to Vayikra has been building a place in this world where God's presence can dwell, can be there. And now we journey inside. How do we enter into that presence? And that's going to be a dominant theme of the book of Vayikra. There's going to be a Yom Kippur service. This is how you go inside. There's going to be an inauguration day when they're literally going to go inside this place. And in that day, the two sons of Aaron are going to die. Right, they're going to meet their death by entering the wrong way. And we're going to get a Yom Kippur service of how to enter. And so this is really how do you enter into the closest proximity to God's presence in this world. And suddenly we begin to see, wow, its opening word, God calls Vayikra. There's a calling of love. There's a new description of the Mishkan itself. Throughout the book of Shemos of Exodus, it's primarily called Mishkan or Mikdash. Occasionally, it's called Ohel Moed, right, in Tzatzava. But generally speaking, it's right here, its primary modality shifts and it becomes primarily Ohel Moed, which means a tent of meeting, a place you can meet God's presence. And the most important conceptual shift is the word for sacrifice, which will dominate at least the opening, the two sedras we're going to look at today. All the way through the previous books in the Torah, there have been sacrifices, but they have been called zavachim, literally sacrifices. Right? In the book of Vayikra, they're about to get a new description, a new term, and that is korban. And korban doesn't mean sacrifice. It's from the word karov, to draw near. Okay, so we have a few little projects that we want to work on. So the first is really, we've begun to touch upon why Vayikra is so central. It's the invitation in. But we do want to understand how animal sacrifices play this central role. Then we want to look a little bit at the structure of Vayikra and the structure of Tzav. Vayikra, the Sedra, the weekly reading from last week's Torah reading, is essentially describing the process of bringing an offering. What would motivate somebody to bring an offering? What type of offerings can they bring, right? And go through, and what laws are involved in it. Tzav is on the side of receiving. We're now going to go to the Kohanim, to those who are operating the Ohel Moed, the tent of meeting. And what do they have to do when offerings come? And in fact, sometimes similar offerings, but they do, for example, they have daily offerings they have to do regardless of whether anybody brings it or not. So Vayikra is all about what the individual brings, whether it's motivated out of love of God or because they've sinned and need to get some kind of atonement. Vayikra is Tzav is now all about what the Kohanim should do. And there's quite a difference in the dynamics. In fact, if you just looked at it from a technical legal perspective, you could have merged the two together quite easily and just gone through the laws of each offering. But, and that's how later on halachic works will do. There's the law of this type of offering, this type of offering, this type of offering. But the Torah is not looking at that. It's looking at two types of roles involved in the offering. The act of giving, and that's Vayikra, and then the receiving and processing, and that's Tzav. And their dynamic is actually quite different. So much so that the order the offerings are presented differs. Tzav follows the technical, it lists primarily five types of offerings, subdivisions within them, but five types of offerings in the order of how holy they are, which the practical implication is how much of the offering goes on to the, is consumed in the fire of the altar, and how much is eaten by the person who brings it. You have two extremes. You have one extreme is the animal's almost always totally burned on the altar. And the other extreme is the animal is eaten, but a tiny amount, let's say the blood and a little bit goes on the altar, but essentially it's a meal. And these are called kodshe kodshim, the holy, holy, they're all called kodshim, they're all holy things. Kodshe kodshim, the holy, holy ones, are the ones that are given primarily or totally onto the altar. The kodshim kalim, the lighter holy ones, are the ones that are primarily eaten. And if you look in Tzav, they basically go in order of the most holy, the oila, the animal offering that's completely burnt, the mincha, right, the flower offering that's almost, certainly the owners don't get to eat. Some of it goes on the altar, some of it the kohanim, the priests in the temple eat, but from the owner's perspective, it's given away. The chatos, the sin offering, which is still very holy, and it's some more of that's eaten by the kohen. The osham, the guilt offering, and then finally the shlomim, the offering where really it's mostly eaten by the owner, right? You bring it for it's literally called a peace offering. You bring it out of goodwill to God, or while they were traveling in the desert, every meal they would have would basically, if they wanted to eat an animal, some of it had to go onto the altar. So they would travel to the center of the camp where the Ohel Moed, the tent of meeting was. The blood would go onto the altar of an animal and a little bit would go on, and then the rest would just be eaten, right? So it goes in order of holiness downwards. Not, and that's in Tzav, that's in how you process the offerings. We list them in terms of holiness, more holy to less holy, but not true in Vayikra. In Vayikra, the order does not go that way. You start with the oila, the offering that's completely offered, the animal offered completely, the mincha, the flower offering. And then we go to the shlomim, the one that you eat, right? And then we go to the sin offerings. So the order is changed, and it's not in the natural conceptual hierarchy of most holy downwards, but something's gone out of place, right? And the one that, you just voluntarily bring as a meal and you, eat it, but you just want some of the blood of the Shechita to go onto the altar, that now goes above offerings that are more holy. And that raises a question why. There's other issues that one can raise in the structure of Vayikra. And that is this. For those of you who have more expertise on Chumash and are following inside, you'll notice that there's, generally speaking, parashas are discussed. There's a concept already at the beginning of the book, the word Vayikra. Right? The word Vayikra, Rashi says, is a calling. Lashon Chiba, an expression of love. Lashon Shem Malachei Asharis Mishtamshim, but the language that angels use, the Korazel Zeva Amar, they call to one another. And in unifying themselves, they unify the inner spiritual worlds. Another time, I think we'll discuss what that is. But the algorithms that are driving creation, these spiritual things that are called messengers, or in English, angels, come together, call out to one another, and together bless, bring God's blessing into the world. And then, Rashi, you might think, based on the Medrash, you might think that is true not only of the text of the Torah, but also its gaps. Because when you write the Torah, you have to leave gaps. We call these gaps parashios, right? Literally means segments. No, that is not true, because it's only the speech that contains that pure love. So what are the gaps, therefore, says Rashi? Litim revach ben parasha laparasha, to give a pause, to tell you if you see a gap in the text of the Torah, you're going to stop and think about it, absorb the message that's just been given. Now, if you look at the structure of these gaps, you have the juxtaposition of some of them is quite interesting in Vayikra. I'm not going to go through all of them, but one very obvious juxtaposition that's not natural and not obvious is this. You have mini gaps and larger gaps, gaps that only are gaps of a few letters and gaps that go to the end of the line. And it is natural to assume that a mini gap means you should pause for a bit and think about it. And a major gap means you now have to go all the way back to the whole section since the last major gap and reflect upon all of that as a unit. So it's like you have chapters and subchapters kind of thing. But if that's true, then we have a very interesting conceptual problem. As we talk about the olah, the offering that is completely offered on the altar, you go through different animals and then there's a major gap, new section. And then we talk about the bird offering. What happens if you offer a bird? And then in that same section, you get a little, that's a subsection of the sections dealing with the flower offering. So we've moved the bird you'd expect to be with all the animals. Instead, the bird is transmitted over to the flower offerings section. And that seems very odd. There's other anomalies as well, but that's the one I want to really focus upon. And the reason is Rashi more or less doesn't state explicitly the reason, but makes it pretty clear what they have in common. And we're going to come back. So we're going to, with this now, let's lay out there for the topography of our discussion. What have we discussed? First of all, we have this issue of offerings in general. How do we understand animal offerings? How do we relate to this invitation of God inside? And now we're talking about animal offerings. How are we meant to conceptually make sense of that? Second of all, the difference between the order in Vayikra and Tzav. Vayikra we get is the Sedra, the weekly Torah reading that says, this is how you should bring an offering. And Tzav is how the Kohanim process the offering. Later, we also get the inauguration of the Kohanim, of there's an institution. But the order the offerings are written is not obvious. In Tzav, it follows the natural order of most holy downwards. In Vayikra, it changes the order. Not only that, but in Vayikra, we actually take the bird offering and put it together with the flower offerings, which also seems very strange. So let's try to make sense of all of this. The Ramban, Nachmanides, one of the great commentaries on the Torah, perhaps the second most studied after Rashi, he has a beautiful, I mean, has many, many beautiful pieces, but he says something really fascinating. And his commentary is a 13th century commentary, but it was also one of the first to integrate Kabbalistic teaching in. So he tackles issues from multiple angles and directions. And he explains what is the idea of an animal offering. What is this all about? How do we conceptually relate to it? Today we say in place of it, we have our prayers, but even so. And he says something I think is remarkable, or developing his idea, it's remarkable. You see, the human is constantly struggling between the fact that we are animals and we are angels together. The Talmud describes a human as three parts animal, three parts angel. Right? And often Torah or Tanakh will use the metaphor for an animal for a human being, right? Every tribe in the Jewish, most tribes and Jewish people are, or many are compared to animals, right? And that's because we are animal. Animals have arms, we have arms. Animals have legs, we have legs. Animals have mouths, we have mouths. Eyes, nose, ear, these are all things animals have. Genetically speaking, we are more than 99% genetically the same as the nearest animal that's similar to us, right? This is what we are. And we feel it. You can look at an animal in the zoo and empathize with the type of feelings it might have. Lots of animals, you can kind of get their feelings. You can study the brains of the animals and they have quite a lot of similarity to us. We know our raging anger that takes over our brain, that's there in the animal kingdom. The lots of impulses and lots of attitudes, everything from laziness to territorialism to ego to anger to lust to all sorts of things, tribalism. These are all things that exist in the animal world. And most of these drives, when we lose control of them, lead us to do the things that are wrong in this world, right? It's those that lead us astray, everything from laziness to pride to hurting other people, saying hurtful things, to mistreating people, to following temptation, to tribalism that allows us to demonize others, to territorialism. All these things are aspects of the animal brain when it's not put in service of its angelic, the angelic being that we can be. But what happens in the temple is like this, is you're in a place of very strong proximity to our creator, the creator of animal, the creator of spiritual, the creator of everything. And as we get closer, our mind has the permission to transcend and to literally split itself off. And as we walk in with an animal and we do a process called samicha, we place our hands on it. And in the context of the temple, in the presence of God, it allows us to experience something we can't normally experience, which is this becoming an extension of our body and its brain, an extension of our brain. And our drives can now move over. So it's like we split ourselves into the angelic inner persona here, the animal drives over there. And then when we offer that animal up, all our animal drives and instincts, when it's killed as an animal, it means they lose complete control. They momentarily die. And in that moment, we're free to be a pure angel. And then as they're offered up part or all, then large parts of our very neurons become offered in service of God and they never really come down the temple. And our brain is fundamentally rewired. Our attitude to life is completely shifted in an experience that should be sufficient, that if we sinned, the very act of the offering, together with our own inner desire to change, it can only work. Offerings aren't magic. The person has to come with teshuvah, with the desire to improve, have to be misvada, they have to confess what they've done. But if they really are sincere about what they're bringing, it should be radically transformative. It should change us into people who are no longer animals. We don't get rid of the animal drive forever. We keep it, but it now is in service of us, not we're in service of it. And it's designed to be the most powerful transformative act that could be. Korban, we draw near to God. This is not a sacrifice of, I've given something up for you. There is an element to that. But his deep purpose is to allow us a relationship with God that turns us into conduits of God into the world to bring goodness all over the place. That's the essential idea. And the book of Vayikra is looking at it from the perspective of the one who's offering. And therefore, we list the offerings in context, in direction, not of how holy they are, but how much voluntarism there is. The olah, the complete offering given to God, that's totally voluntary. The mincha, the flower offering, is totally voluntary. The shalomim, the not the least holy maybe of them all, but it's voluntary. All right, I don't need to bring the. Nobody's obligating anyone to bring this offering. It's a meal. So I come into the temple and I say, I want to share, I want some of it to be holy and attached to God so that the very food I then ingest has this message and really will be transformative. And then the sin offering and so on, because they are not brought voluntarily. They have to be brought. So Vayikra is looking at the perspective. God calls and says, in love, come to me. And I know the barrier. I know what's made you serve a golden calf. I know what makes you humans mess up. Do this transformative act. And then you'll be able to come close to my presence and be my conduit into the world. Tzav is, okay, but now how do we receive it, as it were, on behalf of God? Then the kainim, we look at things, and that's this week's reading, in terms of the structure, what's the most holy downwards. And within tzav, amazing, if Vayikra is introduced with the idea of chibah, of love, God calling to us, I'm hearing that call. Tzav is the word tzav, instruct, Rashi says, Zerizos, it's passion, it's alacrity. But here the amazing thing is the passion and the alacrity is, right, is following technical law. What's the most holy, what's the least? And this is how the two dovetail together. In Vayikra is an invitation to a relationship with God. Enter my home, says God. And there's two dimensions. One is your desire to give and love. The other is a sensitivity to what's valuable to me. And that's true in every human relationship. We come with our overwhelming desire to give and love. And we want to volunteer all the things that mean something to us. But then we have to listen to what does it mean on the other side? What does it mean the other? What's holy to them? What matters to them? And that's where our tzav, where our zeriza, where our passion has to lie. So what starts as voluntarism on the one hand has to then transform, our passion has to transform into what do they want? And tzav, Vayikra is maybe once in a lifetime or once a year or offerings. Tzav is every single day. What goes on in the temple every day? And it begins with cleaning the temple, getting rid of the ashes. These, and that shows you love must transform itself into an understanding of the value for the other, into day-to-day activity and never losing passion there. Why in Vayikra is the offering of the bird placed with the flower offering? Because they're the two offerings poor people would bring. And amazingly, when it actually comes to that, to the flower offering says nefesh kisakri, when a soul offers, right? That says it's literally when a soul offers an offering, right? Why a soul? Because the poor person bringing flower, it's humiliating. They'd love to bring an animal like the rich people, but it means so much to God because there's so much voluntarism going. So Vayikra is literally this world of how much do you volunteer in your passionate desire to connect to God. Tzav is how sensitive are you to what matters to God. And that combination, I have so much more to say, I'm just going to leave us with that thought, except to say this, that now that we do not have the temple, now that we do not have the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, so how do we serve God? With our prayers. And there's two dimensions to prayer. On the one hand, there's a Vayikra. Anytime you want, you should talk to God. Spontaneous prayer. Anytime we want, we should be able to articulate ourselves and say, Hashem, here's what I'm struggling with. Hashem, here's what I'm grateful for. Hashem, here is it. At the same time is the siddur. The siddur is like tzav, the journey, spiritual journey that we undertake as we try to get close to God every single day, understanding the journey of the soul. And just like the animal offering, what prayer's meant to do is realign us away from our animal self. Because I say, God, please give me money. Please give me health. Please give me this. 1 second, is that in service to the animal self? Lehit palel, the verb lispalel, to pray, is actually a reflexive verb for judging oneself. We're meant to hear God saying, why should I give this to you? And then we're meant to hear the inner voice saying, well, actually, maybe my self-centered animal is not the key here. God, how can I be in service of you? Okay, what would I do with the wealth? Oh, let me think, actually. The real service from God with wealth should be how do I help others? I'll keep a bit myself. And prayer is meant to be that transformative act. It's got a Vayikra, a calling, a longing. I can pray personally. And it's got a tzav, the journey through the siddur, the journey through the prayer, step by step, as we climb the ladder of ascent. From the morning where we wake up and say, oh, my eyes work. God, thank you so much. But I'm still, my body's the center of reality. To by the time we go through the Pesukei de Zimra, the verse of song, and we no longer talk about ourselves, but all of creation praising God and praying to God. To the world of Shema, where we hear the oneness of God and love. To the world of the Amidah, we stand face to face and talk about that which matters to God. And that's the journey. So that's why, sorry to be called, I do need to finish early. I'm traveling today, so I'm going to leave this message. Hopefully it's been enough that we've covered that it's going to be of value to you. But that's the Vayikra, that's the Tzav. The two together build our relationship with God. And that's part of our daily prayer. And that's how they're both reflected in there. Much more to say, but hopefully this has given us enough to think about and reflect upon as we begin our journey into the book of Vayikra. I apologize, I had to be short, but hopefully, like I say, this has given us plenty to reflect upon as we hear the Vayikra, the calling and love that God has for us, and our response in the passionate love into the day-to-day, the mundane, our daily prayer, following the siddur. How do we, like in every relationship, how do we bring passion into the repetitive? And how do we at the same time never lose the two sides that build that relationship in the Ohel Moed, the place of the deep meeting between man and God? Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos.